Welcome back. This is episode 3 of the Fostering Financial Victories podcast. Thanks for joining us again. Hopefully you enjoyed the first few episodes and you were able to spend some time going through what makes up your ring fence or all the non-negotiables when it comes to your planning that we discussed last time with Rob and Faith. Today we're joined by Lindley and Gordon Gulledge. So we're going to talk through how you can best impact society outside of your normal day-to-day routines. So Lindley is, I would say, the expert in the room when it comes to this charitable discussion that we're going to go into today. And I wanted to give a little bit of a background on her and her story before we get started. So she's an entrepreneur who owns Shock Dance Center and Crown Couture. Did I say that right? All right.
You nailed it.
Her biggest passion in life, though, is her philanthropy work. So she's got two younger siblings who are both differently disabled, right? Mm-hmm. And Brock and Brantley are their names?
Brock and Brantley.
Okay. So they suffer from intellectual and physical struggles a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Lindley's dedicated her time and voice to be an advocate for all the disabled youth. And in 2005, you started your foundation.
I did.
Right. So
started my 501c3.
So, I mean, how do you even get to that point, right?
It seems like it would take years and years to do, but at a very young age, when I can remember when the doctor came in, and we're very close in age, and I can remember him saying, you know, your brother's not going to be able to walk or talk or be of normal size or ability, and all those emotions kind of hit me at one time. And
sure.
So I can just remember sitting there thinking, well, what do we do from here? You know, like,
right.
Will I be able to play with my brother? Will I be able to do, like, normal things that people take for granted? And from then on, I kind of just knew I wanted to be a voice and an advocate. And then it kind of evolved. There's lots of things that happened along the way, but I just knew that I had to do something bigger. And that then turned into raising money instead of just hope and awareness for what my siblings have, but for the 56 million Americans who also suffer from disabilities.
So 15 years ago, though, is when you started this thing.
15 years ago.
So Gordon is our other guest today. So Gordon is a wealth coach with the Foster Victor Wealth Advisors. You've seen this from the start,
mm-hmm.
right? So you've got a different perspective than probably anyone else that Lindley is around on a daily basis. So
yeah,
you've seen it from the
absolutely.
Very start.
Yeah, so I have a unique perspective on this, obviously, because it's an ongoing joke with our not only our firm but our friends that we dated 10 years before getting married.
Only maybe wait a decade.
That's right. That's right. So we've been together for over a decade, but even before then, this foundation was already up and running. And so my unique perspective is really seeing, you know, what it was back in high school when she was so passionate about it. And I think that most people see kind of the finished product, right? So like what you're doing from a charitable perspective, you know, out in the community, right? But I get to see the blood, sweat, and tears that go into it behind the scenes. And I think that most people think that running a foundation and charity is very difficult and that it's one person doing everything. And I know with you, it's a family deal. It's parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, Brock and Brantley. So it's not a one-person show. And so I've got to see that perspective. But just seeing the growth, and we'll get into it a little bit because we've already talked about how everything started. But just seeing how that's grown over time and how thoughts of what is, you know, the potential of this thing is and how that could grow into something that's really, really impactful.
So, Lindley, when you got the idea to start this foundation, what was the initial goal? What did you want to be able to accomplish through it?
I think my initial goal, because I was so young, was to be able to change the hearts and minds of the way people perceive children with disabilities. I think that's kind of where it all began, because I'd be in school and I would see my brother being ostracized or, you know, people in his class being left out and that kind of thing. And that just hurt my heart so much. And so that's kind of where it all evolved. And I wanted to change people's attitudes and, you know, and that type of thing. And then I realized I can raise money doing this, you know, and I did all the radiothons and everything at the Children's Miracle Network Hospital. And I'd pick up the phones when I was like 7 years old and I'd be like ringing that bell when I got the donations and to see that. And then to walk into a children's hospital and they say like, you bought this bed or you bought this awesome DVD machine for the kids, then you're like, okay, I want to raise more and I want to keep doing more. Yeah. So it started out as, you know, being able to change hearts, and then really I wanted to raise as much money as possible, help as many kids as I could.
And one thing to follow up on that too, because I think that obviously to start these foundations and charity, like, you have to have a passion behind it, right?
But absolutely.
What is, and some of this I know, some of this I'm sure I don't know, what is like a gatekeeper or something that's like, this is, you know, a hidden struggle that I didn't realize before starting this? Is there anything that you're like, yeah, that was something that I'd like to prepare other people for, or is it as easy as just kind of having an idea and running with it?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely struggles in the beginning of thinking like, wow, can I actually start my own 501c3? Like, what is actually involved in that? And for a while, it's like, can I do that? And then when you once you pass the couple hurdles that you have to get through to do that, once you have it, it's easy. I mean, really, I mean, I hate to say raising money is easy because it's definitely not. But for me, it was because what I was doing it for was so special. The only, I think, thing that I would run into is that I get so attached to all the kids. I meet kids in the hospital or things like that. And I want to give them $1 million right then, you know, and that's always been my heart. But I was asked to be the spokesperson for Children's Miracle Network when I was 10 years old, just because of my work with Children's Miracle Network. And so I went on and I was getting to meet all these kids and kind of interview them and everything. And I met this girl named Natalie. And about 2 months later, my mom came and got me from school and told me that she didn't make it. And in that moment, I was like, you kind of have a moment and you kind of step back and you're like, what am I doing?
You're 10 years old. I can't imagine
how
that discussion goes.
She was older than me, but she had some form of cancer. I can't really remember what it was, but we just got so close. I mean, we would talk all the time, and to be there in that room with her and to hear her story and how strong she was, I felt so weak in that moment, but I knew that I needed to continue doing what I was doing to make a difference for the other children like her. So
you started this. How old were you?
I was 14 when I got the charity.
When I officially made it a foundation.
But my work began when I was much younger than that.
So I think, you know, Gordon, you were talking about it a minute ago, people get a little bit maybe intimidated by the word foundation when they hear it. Because I think they think of the Bill Gates Foundation or something that's just, you know, astronomical in size. So I guess how do you wrap your head around when you go to start this? Just organizing it out, figuring out who do you partner with, how do you organize that piece? I'm sure that family had a big impact to help.
They did.
Right.
They did, especially at that age, being so young. It was hard for me to cross some of those hurdles just because of that specifically. But I think the most important thing for me was just making sure that I had all of the fundamentals that I needed. I needed to have that board of directors, so I wanted people that were close to me that could sit down. You have to meet a certain number of times per month, make decisions about the charity, so I can't do all of that on my own, legally and technically. So that was something that I had to kind of hurdle past as a 14, 15-year-old, figuring all that out. But the paperwork side of it is really not that bad. I mean, they want you to start foundations, and they want us to raise money. Yeah. So essentially, once you pass through the paperwork, then it gets a lot easier.
Okay.
And to play off that too, I think that, you know, again, you had this idea and this passion that was your brother and sister, but once you started to see momentum with that, and I'll let you tell the story of kind of how it started with the ladybugs and all that stuff, but once you started to see momentum there, it just kind of snowballed into something bigger and bigger as you saw that success, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm a goal setter, so if I say I want to raise $60,000 during this one event, then I make goals to figure out, okay, how much do I need to raise this day to get there? But I think it all started when I was so young, and it all started as, like, my dad would bring home river rocks. Literally, he's a fly fisherman, and he brought home rocks from the river. And I loved ladybugs. So we would get a bunch of volunteers together as a community, spray paint them, draw them all into ladybugs, and take donations, like literally a dollar at a time. And then I'm like, okay, well, I raised $10 today, which to me as a kid, I think at this time I was probably like 7 years old, and I'm like, woo. And so I would do a lot better doing that than at a lemonade stand. And I was also really passionate about it. So from then on, though, the ladybug became, and LADY stands for Lindley's Alliance for Disabled Youth. And from then on, it just became a recognizable thing. Like, I would walk into my neighbor's kitchen and I would see their ladybug, and they would say they would look at that, and it reminded them to be kind and treat others how you would want to be treated. And then I would get donors that would just want to donate every single year, larger donors. And then I'm like, okay, well, now I'm raising thousands of dollars. So that's when you kind of have to do, you know, dollar at a time and really get there when you're so young and just starting out. But it's definitely been worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm involved in a number of charities, and fundraising is always that one piece. When it gets brought up, everybody kind of sinks back and think, please don't look at me. I don't want to have to jump in here and do this. Mm-hmm. Is that the biggest hurdle? For everybody?
I think that's the hardest part, you know? I mean, and I can remember, like, a while back, my aunt and my mom saying, well, we're just going to cold call some people and get you, like, that's not easy at all. Like, to walk into a business and have just a flyer, But when I would tell my story and explain about my brother and sister and kind of the hurdles that they've overcome, which I can talk a little bit more about, people's right. heart just open up, you know? And so if you have that courage to just get in there and ask, you may get told no 50 times, but you may get told yes once, and then it's worth it, to me at least.
And I think the beauty, too, of, like, you having your own foundation is that, you know, some foundations or charities, you donate money, and you're hoping it goes to the correct place, but maybe sometimes it doesn't. With you, like you already said, you get to see exactly where it's impactful, and you know that this check you're giving to a certain hospital or wherever it is, you can see that as you revisit over the years, and that's so huge, I think, just for knowing that the money's going to something that's passionate to you.
Absolutely. And that's what our board kind of decides on. Sometimes I'll give, both of my siblings went to Jailman, so they need different chairs or mm-hmm. equipment, and then Meyer Center I love, so I give a lot back to them to support their program. So it's nice to be able to see, like, where is the need right now in the yeah. community. And
you guys are both kind of partial to Dabo's charity as well.
He has completely converted me because I grew up in Columbia and I'm a Carolina fan. Dad, I'm so sorry I just said that. Dabo and Kathleen are so giving and so loving, and they have special needs students that are on their staff at Clemson. So I just think that's an incredible thing to be a part of for sure.
Neat. So as you started to go down the road of setting goals for the foundation, has your objective changed at all in the last 15 years?
Absolutely. I remember when I was 15 and my mom's like, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I think I just want to sell like a couple hundred ladybugs. Like, how much money will that get me? You know, and there was no set price on a ladybug or anything like that. But as it all started was to really teach people how these kids with special needs want to be treated. Mm-hmm. But my perspective changed because I just thought, why are they treating my siblings differently, you know? But in reality, some people just don't understand, you know? Yeah. Whereas, like, I've grown up since I was a baby with these kids. Gordon didn't necessarily. And so it's all about telling people in a loving way that they want to be treated the same. And so my mindset definitely kind of shifted to where I was a little bit more, not angry, but a little bit angry in the beginning with how they were being treated. And now I just see it as, like, an opportunity to really teach people how to treat kids with disabilities. Yeah. And obviously to raise a little bit more money than just sell 200 ladybugs,
you know. Yeah, so what's the goal? Do you have a goal now for how much you want to raise?
My goal ultimately is to be able to open a facility for kids that graduate from high school. Because my siblings are both graduated now, and there's great places like the Meyer Center for younger students. But my sister loves to be around people. My brother, too. But Brantley loves that kind of thing. So I have my special needs dance classes at my studio that are completely free. But it would be nice for them to have, like, a place where they could go and do jobs and really have that purpose in life that they did when they were going to high school. So my ultimate big dream would be to open somewhere like that.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. This is a loaded question that I know we get asked a lot. And you're probably getting mad for that. So best asset that one person can give to a charity or foundation? Is it time, treasure, talent, something else? In your opinion, I know it's all the above is great, but...
Yeah, I mean, definitely all the above is awesome, but if you don't have that money to give at that time, time is so special. I mean, you can go and volunteer a couple times a month and change somebody's life just by being there to make cards with them or play games with them, and I think that's something really special, and it doesn't just change the people that you're helping, it changes you. I mean, I know it's Absolutely. Changed me immensely and shaped the person that I am today. So time, I'd say, for sure.
You know, it's kind of interesting that we're in episode 3 here, and in the first episode when Ben came to town and talked about goal setting, one of his big takeaways for everybody who was listening was to add a part of your goal to be somewhat charitably inclined, to give something, whether it's mm-hmm. time or treasure or whatever. So the fact that, you know, kind of right here, and that wasn't planned by any means.
Coming full circle.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Do you see where, so say the person that they've never been involved in a charitable environment at all, but they want to get involved somehow. How do they do it?
I love this question because a lot of even my dance students at Shock will come to me and be like, you're so involved in these different charities, but how? And honestly, if you find your passion, whether it's special needs youth, dogs, sport, doesn't matter what it is, there is a charity locally that you can get come together and support, go to their website, look under how to get involved. That's what I always used to do too, even before all of this came about. But reach out to me too. I'm happy to help anybody that's really looking to volunteer. Hands on Greenville, thousands of people get together that day. And my students did that too, and now they go every single month back to that charity. So it's just kind of, and try a bunch of different places and see what you relate to and what you're passionate about.
Just take the first step.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You don't have to start your own foundation or that type of thing, but just to give your time, it's priceless.
Yeah, I agree. All right, you might have touched on this earlier, but I was thinking through, and is there one, you know, particular event, something that really is an impactful memory to you that you look back and you're like, that's never going to leave me because it was so special to me? I know you have a ton, but is there one that really sticks out to you?
It's so hard because I meet so many special kids all the time. And there's so many that I cherish and that I love, but I think I have to take it back to where it all started with my siblings, because sitting in that room that day and thinking, like, how is our life gonna change if my brother can't ever talk to me or tell me how he's feeling, and then my sister then coming along and being the same way, and then seeing him run at the Special Olympics, like, he used to have leg braces, couldn't walk at all, runs the 50-yard dash. Like, I will never forget that moment, I don't think, of him running towards me. And even still to this day, that's why I do what I do. You know, if we can collectively give kids the opportunity to do things that they never thought possible, just with some love and a smile and some support, and that's worth it to me. So I think that's like the memory that I always go back to each time.
I was there for that. That was pretty special.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So all of the funds that you're raising right now, you mentioned earlier about, you know, buying things for the hospital or for certain organizations. How do people benefit now directly from you? Is it more like that, or do you have some sort of like scholarship program or anything like that that's associated with the foundation currently? I know some do, but
we do the Change the World Champions program every year, where people can actually send in nominations of kids that are going above and beyond for special needs youth. So if a teacher sees a regular student at school that's really gone above and beyond, we offer a scholarship for them. And then also, it's just like we sit down with the board of directors. This year it was the Meyer Center. So we were able to give a big chunk of money to the Meyer Center and really support them, and more kids can go there and they can buy equipment and that kind of thing. But it's really been different every year when we kind of see where that is needed. And then there's some organizations that we give to every single year.
So Gordon has said this in passing a few times. Uh-huh. Tell me about this Disney deal.
Oh, okay. Well, my sister loves Disney, so that's where it all kind of began. But J-O-Man, they try to take their students on a trip to Disney, which can be kind of hard because a lot of them are wheelchair bound and that kind of thing. So we've bought actually chairs that they can take to Disney for the kids, and that really help them in their everyday lives too at the schools. We've bought different equipment that can help them actually tell us what they're thinking just from their device. So whereas my brother can't tell us what he wants to eat, or we kind of have to choose, he can now point and say, I want pizza or chicken fingers or whatever that is. So we've helped buy different equipment like that. But the Disney trip, I would say, is one of them. I mean, that's what they get the most out of, because they all love it. Mm-hmm. And they look so forward to it every year. And they bring back their albums of all their fun memories. And so we really love to be able to support that.
Very cool. Very cool. So when you first started this, was there ever a concern about needing to have a certain amount of money to get a foundation started? Is it expensive to start one?
It is not.
Okay.
It is really not expensive. I know that my aunt Linda is a businesswoman, 110%, and so she was very helpful in getting it started. But the fees are not expensive at all to get it going. Now, keeping the money in the account, and I don't ever get, we don't, unless we're having an event, 100% of everything goes back to charity. And so we do a big event every year, but we try to get everything donated and sponsored. And that is something else that I try to encourage people to do, because our community is very giving. But it's not expensive to get your 501c3 started.
Okay.
And like you
said, it
takes
a little time, but.
Absolutely. And like you said, you try to have one big event every year. And now that it's 5, 6, 7 years into that big event for you, it's kind of expected for the people that you said are repeat givers. Mm-hmm. And it's so huge to know that I have a following. They know exactly, you know, what they're doing by donating to the foundation or to the charity, and they're expecting that phone call, and it's a warm phone call versus, like you said, the no or the cold calling. And it's something that just kind of builds on itself as it continues to grow.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's and cool. Getting the kids involved in the events is really special too, because they love to be there and they love to get to meet everybody. But it's awesome for somebody who maybe has not had much interaction with somebody with special needs to be at an event and see them walk down a runway in a fashion show, or, you know, do things like that. So it's cool to keep them involved too.
Okay. So being in a financial planning environment that Gordon and I are in all the time, we always get a lot of questions about, you know, legacy as being a goal for folks who want to leave money to charities or churches or endowments. Do you get a lot of interaction from, I guess, your giving community about that type of arrangements, or do they kind of just sporadically say, hey, you know what, we're going to give this year and this is how much we're going to do? Or are they thinking long term and trying to set those things in place?
I have had a couple of people that have donated every single year since I started that have asked me about that. And then most of the time it's just sporadic. And if somebody started off giving $500, that donor may now be the one that gives $10,000 because they've seen kind of where the money goes and what it impacts. And so that's the special part, is that I am able to call them every year and say, this is the event we're doing this year. And it's not really the same every year. We like to kind of switch it up and get different people involved instead of just the dance community or, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think from a planning perspective too, there's different tools out there and strategies that we encounter on a daily basis that has, you know, you might say for 2020, I want to give X amount of dollars. Mm-hmm. And you might know exactly how much you want to give a charity. And so there's some strategies we can help implement that, because I do think that, you know, you go to an event and you see kids and you kind of get caught up in the moment and you do donate sporadically, which is totally welcome. But there's also strategies where you're like, there's ways to allocate what amounts go into what place, and we're encountering that on a weekly basis, I know.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest, I don't know, revelations, if you want to call it that, out of the tax changes over the last couple of years has been the ability to do a qualified charitable distribution. So, you know, and for those of you who don't know what that is, once you are of age 70 and a half, you are required to start taking money out of your 401k or IRA. And this will allow you to redirect some of those dollars to charitable organizations directly without either party really incurring any sort of tax liability. I think it's a huge advantage from a charity standpoint to be aware that that's out there. Now you can kind of, you know, strategically start looking for people of maybe that age that are involved in giving.
Y'all taught me something today. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
But I think that's a big takeaway with what changed a few years ago in the tax code. I know that's come up a lot in our office of just, hey, here's an idea. Especially if they're charitably inclined.
It incentivizes giving. Yeah, absolutely.
Gotta love that.
Yeah, right.
As far as, you know, when people are thinking about, you know, all right, do I take the step and get involved now? Do I just give money? There's no wrong answer, obviously.
No wrong answer.
You would just encourage them just to go, right? Just find something you're passionate about and just go.
Just jump in and see where you fit. Yeah. You know, you may find an organization that you fall in love with. And you may not, and you may just want to give the money. And either way is fine, but it will change you if you get involved either way.
And you mentioned it earlier, too. If you have a passion about dogs or whatever it may be, I can promise you, if you reach out to that charity, they're going to take the phone call, and they're going to want you to come talk to them.
Even if they say, we don't have a place for you to volunteer, they're never going to say no to you being charitable.
That's right.
So. Give us some money. We'll help you track it, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So there are a couple other planning tips that, you know, we wanted to talk about in this episode as far as how it relates to your ability to give to charities and making it efficient. One of the other options that have come up as of late are something that's called a donor-advised fund. So Gordon, you want to talk through that a little bit and just kind of explain how that works?
Yeah. If you had a desire to donate $50,000 or some number to charity in a given year, it gives you the ability to have some tax efficiency in that year to where you donate it to basically a fund that the dollars are invested, if you want them to be. And then you can unwind those dollars as you see fit in the future. So it could be $50,000 to your charity. It could be $5,000 along the way. But it basically allows you to control the dollars while still getting some tax benefit from allocating those dollars into the donor advised fund.
In that same year, though,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think from our perspective, we're always talking with clients on how you can be tax efficient and with everything they're doing. Those who are very charitably inclined, those are the discussions that we're going to lean on a lot of the expertise from your side of what's the best way to do this. And I don't know, is there a wrong way or a right way that you see more efficient or just easier to administer from the foundation standpoint? Do you see any hindrances on any of these options?
I really haven't run into any, unless someone donates a large chunk of money and then they specifically want it to go to this organization or that organization, which we can do. I mean, it's very easy on our end, but it's a little bit more difficult. But other than that, not really.
I mean, so everything's pretty easy.
You have to be very specific with, if you do have an event, where your funds are going, if it's for the food or for, you know, they're just very specific about all of that. But Good. Not too hard.
That's good. So the last thing we want people to do is to make y'all's job harder.
Exactly.
To save money.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you've got on your mind, Gord, on this? Do you think we covered enough to give people an idea from the charitable aspect?
Yeah, I think
okay.
so.
Yeah. All right. So, Lindley, you don't know these questions.
Goodness.
This is where we have a little bit of fun.
Your husband might have known them. But
he knows them.
Yeah.
We've asked these questions to everybody on each episode so far.
Okay.
And we want to ask you this just to kind of get your feedback.
It's a test.
Are you supposed to share everything with me?
No, I can't share
everything.
I'm kidding. Okay, so the first question, is there a financial mistake that you made that you learned the hard way?
Oh, my. Absolutely, yes, actually. I lived in California for 7 years, and I leased my apartment, and I literally once a month I look back and I think, God, that money had gone. I should have just put money.
So that was cheap, right?
Not, yeah. And I mean, I lived with five girls, but still, it was
when you moved
a pretty chunk of money.
The total for 7 years, and I said we never need to look
at
that number again.
I can't even speak of the number again.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. So if I could go back and do that again, no regrets, because I did love my experience, but that would be the one thing I would change.
Okay. Second question, if you could buy anything in the world, no matter what it costs, what would it be and why?
Well, we already just got a new puppy, so we'll cross that off the list. I think it would be my facility for kids that have graduated from high school.
Okay.
So hopefully one day we'll be able to make that a reality with my foundation, but I think that'd be what I would buy.
Very cool. Very cool. Gordon, what about you? Those two questions.
I think for me, I was just thinking through it, as you said, the biggest financial mistake. And I'm laughing in my head because, you know, this. Back in high school, I had this black Xterra. It was my first car.
No.
Loved it. And I thought it was going to be a good idea to put, like, a sound system in it. And so instead of getting it professionally installed, I was like, I'll just buy a better sound system, and I'll just do it myself because it's just, like, a few wires.
It's gotta be easy,
not
right?
handy, yeah. In case y'all didn't know that already.
So, month goes in, it starts breaking down. I keep trying to fix it, putting Band-Aids on it. And so it works for probably 6 months. I spend more money trying to fix it than it cost. That wasn't the best financial decision.
Huh?
Yeah. So,
right trying
now,
too hard to be cool.
Okay.
That's right. I shouldn't try at all. Yeah.
All right.
And then.
If you could have anything, buy anything in the world, what would it be?
I thought about this earlier too, because I might have known this question already. But I think that I would, and I don't know why it popped in my head, I'd buy Disney. Because I think that one thing is
that'd be good for
that
the charity
you
too.
Love Disney. You used to work there for a little while. That's Brantley and Brock's favorite place in the world. But I know that one of your passions is sending those kids to Disney. And I feel like if I own it, I could probably get them in for a discount.
Maybe.
So,
that's a really good one.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's
should have given
after.
That to you.
Okay. All right. Last question I've got for you. Last two things you spent money on.
Oh, gosh. Well, I just say Arby's for lunch.
All right.
And... don't tell Gordon, but another pair of shoes, Cheetah shoes.
He may have
a shoe problem.
He may have bought some shoes, too.
Yeah,
I bought two, that's right.
Between the two of us, we probably have more shoes than
Okay.
Most.
So Arby's and some Cheetah shoes. All right,
yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
What about you?
Mine would have been my large iced coffee from Dunkin' Donuts this morning. Everyone at the office sees that every day. And I think the second sizable one would be us checking out of our hotel room this weekend in New Orleans for a wedding. That was the last substantial purchase or thing I've spent money on outside of food.
All right. So, Lindley, tell everybody how they can find you and learn more about your foundation and what you're up to.
Yeah, of course. You can go straight to my website. It's lindleymeyer.com, and you can look at everything there. Lindley, just click on the philanthropy tab, and everything about Lindley's Alliance will come up. You can nominate somebody if they're a Change the World champion. You can donate there, or you can just learn more about how to volunteer.
Cool. Can they find you on the social media world?
You can find me on the social media world, just Lindley Meyer.
Okay. All right. So, our next episode, I want to take a few minutes and give you a snippet of what's to come for the next episode. It'll be available on February the 27th, and we're going to be joined by Courtney Bowman. So she's going to help shed some light on tips and resources for those who may be aging in their home. So for us, it might be our parents, our grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
So some strategies there, kind of talk through some misnomers and some myths. So we're excited for her to come and share some time with us next time. Hopefully you've enjoyed this. The three major takeaways we want you to take from this discussion on a planning standpoint were the qualified charitable distributions, the QCD, the donor advised funds,
yep.
And the last one was it is possible to use life insurance to name a beneficiary as the charity. the owner would pay the premium and take a tax deduction. So if I was donating to a charity, I could pay the premium for it, take the tax deduction for the premium. The charity gets the death benefit after I die tax-free. So that's another takeaway. If you'd like to learn more about any of this from a planning standpoint, please reach out to us. One of our wealth coaches will be happy to help. You can also find us on our website. It's www.fostervictorwa.com. And if you have some suggestions or questions for us, please don't hesitate to send it. You can also find us on Instagram at Foster Victor Wealth Advisors. Thanks for spending some time with us. Hopefully this has been worth your time. Okay, so for our accountability check for this episode, we'd like to challenge you to really give some thought to how you can go about giving talent, time, or treasure to someone or some group this week. Information contained in this podcast was intended for general use, not to be used as specific advice. For content tailored to your personal situation, please contact one of our wealth coaches.